Hi, good morning. Today we are going to be learning about Chulda HaNeviya and why is it so important to know where she sat. What does that tell us? So far what we've been seeing is that the way not only we see in the Pshat, but also the way Chazal, the Midrashim, and the Parshanim discuss the women that we've studied so far. We see with Bnot Slovchad how positive they are about all their learning, about their approach, the way they behaved, and that they're really a role model for us to understand how do you approach the leaders of the generation, what kind of respect, the amount of knowledge that they had, that they knew how to really discuss this halachic issue. We saw with Esther also this beautiful respect, right? She comes to the Chachamim, she says, Kva'uni ledorot, but especially we also saw how she really redeems the family name. She makes sure that Haman is destroyed, relating back to Shaul. He left Agag Melech Amalek alive, and now she wants to make sure Haman is destroyed, but also she is the one who makes sure that Bnei Israel are saved, not only in Shushan the city, but really in the 127 lands, pretty much known civilization during that time where the Jews lived. Today we're going to be studying about Chulda HaNeviya. Many times we don't really study the perek that is connected with Chulda HaNeviya, and many of us don't know much about Chulda. Some people are called Chulda, and that's what we know about her, but today we're going to study about a very important individual who plays a very important role in the list of the Sheva Neviot. So today we're going to learn about Chulda HaNeviya. And the story of Chulda HaNeviya takes place in Malachim Bet, Perek Kaf Bet, when we're talking about Yoshiyahu HaMelech. Now, who is Yoshiyahu HaMelech? Yoshiyahu was a Baal Tshuva king. He was a Baal Tshuva at a very young age. His grandfather was Menashe, one of the most evil kings that we have from the kings of Yehuda, who ruled for 55 years. And during his time, he pretty much eradicated, especially during the first part of his rule, any kind of Torah learning. And Bnei Israel, right, especially Malchut Yehuda, because at this point only the Judean kings are left in the south, Torah learning and Torah knowledge was pretty much non-existent. And then he had a son, Amon, who only ruled for 2 years. And then Amon had Yoshiyahu. So Yoshiyahu was born to a family, right, even though they were kings, who did Avodah Zarah, who totally neglected the Bet HaMikdash, so much so that Menashe brings Avodah Zarah into the Bet Mikdash. And even at the end, according to Divrei Hayamim, right, that he does tshuva, he just throws all the idols over the wall. So his son very easily is able to bring them back in, and Yehuda is really in terrible shape. So Yoshiyahu is really the first serious Baal Tshuva, right, in this three generations. And not only does he return to Hashem, he also brings this big Baal Tshuva movement for Am Yisrael. It's very complicated about Menashe, his grandfather, because in Malachim, he's the most evil king who ever existed. And in Sefer Malachim, the Chorban, which happens generations later, is because of the actions of Menashe. In Divrei Hayamim, it says, oh, in the end of his life, he did personal tshuva, but we see it didn't really have so much of an impact on Am Yisrael, and definitely not on his son, because Amon still does the Avodah Zarah. So Yoshiyahu comes from this kind of family, but he himself does this unbelievable tshuva. He becomes king only when he's 8 years old. Look at Pasuk Aleph. Ben Shmona Shana Yoshiyahu ben Malcho. He rules when he's 8 years old, and he rules for 31 years. And it tells us, Vayas Hayashar b'nei Hashem. Not only does he go b'derech Hashem, he's as good as David, right? B'chol derech David Aviv, lo sar yamin u'smol. In Sefer Melachim, when it tells us that someone is going in the ways of David HaMelech, And here it also adds, he didn't even veer left or right, right? We know that famous phrase that we have about following Talmidei Chachamim and the leaders of your generation. So Yoshiyahu was really a very important and successful king who went Bederech Hashem. In his 18th year of ruling, he says, look, let's refurbish the Bet HaMikdash. Let's fix up the Bet HaMikdash. We have Avodah Zarah brought in, right? It's hard to think about that because we know, oh, the Hashmonaim story, they purified the Bet HaMikdash because the Syrian Greeks came and defiled the Bet HaMikdash. But here we have Melech Yehuda, the king of Yehuda, bringing Avodah Zarah into the Bet HaMikdash, his own grandfather, right? So he sees it as his role to fix up the Bet HaMikdash, purify it, and really make sure that there could be worship in the Bet HaMikdash. And they fix the Bet HaMikdash, and as they're fixing the Bet HaMikdash, they're doing a pretty much gut renovation in certain places. Chilkiyahu Pasuk Chet. Vayomer Chilkiyahu Kohen Agadol El Shafana Sofer Sefer Torah Matzati. I found a Sefer Torah in Beit Hashem. And Chilkiyahu gives the Sefer to the Sofer, and they read it. And then they bring, right, the Sefer, right? They bring it to the Melech, and they read it before the Melech. And when Melech Yoshiyahu hears what's written in the Sefer Torah, he rips his clothing, which means he's an Avelot. So obviously it's a very difficult part of the Torah that they're reading. So the question is, how could they be refurbishing the Beit Mikdash? How could it be that they're finding a Sefer Torah? Is it that they really didn't have a Sefer Torah for all these years? Here they are in Yerushalayim, in Malchut Yehuda. You had a king from Yehuda. They're not in exile yet. And yet there was such a situation where Bnei Yisrael were so alienated from the Sefer Torah that they didn't have the Sefer Torah. So the question is, how could this be? Right? How could this be? So now turn to number 9, which we're going to have this question. We're in number 9, page 2. Rashi in Melachim Bet, Perakav Bet. Sefer HaTorah Matzati. What does this mean, I found the Sefer Torah? So what does Rashi explain? Tamun tachad hanidbach. Right? It's under one of the thresholds or one of the cornerstones. Shehitmidu sham ksesaraf achaz et haTorah. So Rashi says, oh, it's not even from Menashe's time when they burned the Sefer Torah. If you go back a few generations, another evil king of Malchut Yehuda was Achaz. Achaz was Chizkiyahu's father. Chizkiyahu was an amazing king, also was a big Baal Tshuva. But Achaz, his father, right, was upset, and this is something that's very interesting. We have very strict rules. Only the Kohen can worship in the Beit Mikdash. He's the only one who can bring Ketoret. He's the only one who can bring Korbanot. And as time went on, we see that the Malchei Yehuda, the kings of Yehuda, were frustrated. Why can't I also, right, bring Ketoret or worship in the Beit HaMikdash? Even Uzziyahu HaMelech, who was an amazing king, went Bederech Hashem, was frustrated by this division of roles. Now, we can understand that because, oh, if you're a king and you're good, you feel I should be able to do everything. But in Torah and mitzvot, we have to follow mitzvot Hashem. Everybody has their role. The Kohanim have their role. The Melachim have their role. Men have their role. Women have their roles. But it's very hard, right, when you want to have all the roles. So this became a problem for Malchei Yehuda. So Achaz, right, according to the Midrash, burns the Sefer Torah, because if you burn the Sefer Torah, which talks all about the role of the Kohanim, and only the Kohanim and Levi'im can worship, right, do the Avodah and the Beit Mikdash, so therefore, it's on the side, and he made his own Mizbeach that he copied from Syria, and he has it outside, and he worships there, and he even gets some of the Kohanim to follow along. So this has been a process that has been going on, right, throughout several kings. And you have some kings, and then their sons, some of them are Balei Tshuva. And then again, who is Menashe's father, Chizkiyahu, one of the most amazing kings that we have. But sometimes we don't have the kings giving over that message to the next generation. We don't have them saying, okay, you have to be good. You have to make sure the Torah and mitzvot is going to be permeated throughout your malchut, throughout your kingdom. And this is a big problem, which means it's very important for the melech, of course, to be Jewish, right? To follow mitzvot Hashem and make sure that he brings that message to all of Am Yisrael. But we also have to make sure that we care about the next generations. One of the biggest things we say every morning, right? That we want tzetzeinu, right? V'tzetzei amcha beit Yisrael, right? To be involved in Torah. But there's a beautiful rendition that tzetzeinu v'tzetzei tzetzeinu. When we want to teach our children and we say that we want Torah to continue with our children, we say we want our children, but also our grandchildren and all of the progeny that we have really going down. Because it's our job to make sure that there's continuity. What we find in life, and also with the Melachim, some of the important kings, even though they were very successful, they didn't make sure that their legacy is going to be handed down for next generation. So our job also is to make sure that the Torah that we're learning and the messages that we're learning really are passed down throughout all the generations. And that's a big part of our responsibility, not just to fill ourselves with Torah, but to make sure that our kids, our grandkids, and that we see that message going down for all future generations. So Ahaz wanted to make sure there's no Torah, there's no message that would limit any of his activities. And we find that other Mefarshim, I didn't bring them all here for today, but other Mefarshim say, no, it can't be Ahaz because Chizkiyahu was so good. What does it mean they didn't have the Sefer Torah? So some of the other Mefarshim explain, what Sefer Torah is it? That Menashe hid the real Sefer Torah that they had in the Beit HaMikdash that was handed down all the way from Moshe Rabbeinu, because it says Sefer HaTorah Matzati, not just a Sefer Torah, but the Sefer Torah, that they wanted to make sure that you didn't find that continuity. You couldn't trace it back to Moshe Rabbeinu, and each generation can do what it wants, right? To break the chain of Mesorah. So there are different interpretations, but it's fascinating that they're finding a Sefer Torah and that these leaders of the generation, when they open it up and see what's written in there, didn't know what was in there. So it had to be that the knowledge, right, was lost partially, right, of what this means. Another interpretation is that it was symbolic when they opened this Sefer Torah that it was opened to a certain passage in Tanakh. And what was the passage? Again, we're on number 9. Dirshu Hashem Ba'adi. We're going to get to that pasuk in a second. Re'e katuv yolech Hashem otcha ve'et malkecha. What was the message when they opened it up? It was the tochacha about galut. In Israel, they felt, no way are we ever going to go into galut. Every time Hashem forgives us, we do terrible things, right? We sin, Hashem forgives us, we're going to stay in Eretz Yisrael. They didn't really believe that Galut was going to come. And when they opened up the Sefer Torah and it was emphasized, it was open to that part, what was the feeling? Wow, maybe Galut could come. We really have to do a serious tshuva. It's not like, oh, we can sin and then Hashem is going to forgive us. We have to really do a serious tshuva in order to get past this punishment of Galut. So Yoshiyahu takes this very seriously, and he sends a message, and he wants to find out what the Nevi'ah says. So turn back. We're back to source number 1. We're going to see the Pesukim. What does Yoshiyahu request? Look at Pasuk Yud Gimel. Yoshiyahu requests, L'chu dirshu et Hashem ba'adi. I want to find out, what's the message? What's the uber message, right? What is the message, the meta message, that we found the Sefer Torah and that it's opened up to this passage? What is the idea? Because, wow, what we're finding is that Hashem's anger, G'dola chamat Hashem, he nitzta banu, right? And all of our forefathers are never listening, right? They're sinning, right? They don't listen to the Nevi'im who come. So there's this cycle. But so far, this cycle, we stayed in Eretz Yisrael. Yes, enemies come and attack, but we were able to stay in Eretz Yisrael. But if the ultimate punishment is galut, then that is a game changer. So what does he do? He says, find out what this message means. And Chilkiyahu and Achikam, all the leaders of that generation, Pasuk Yudalad, who do they go to? They go to Choldah HaNeviah. So here we have the biggest question about the existence of Am Yisrael, continuity in Eretz Yisrael. Yoshiyahu the king is saying, okay, ask this big existential question that we have, finding the Sefer Torah, and they go to Choldah HaNeviah. And how is she described? Eshet Shalom ben Tikva ben Charchas Shomer Abgadim. She's married to Shalom ben Tikva, who watches the clothing. Two different views. Either he watches the clothing of the Kohanim, or he watches the clothing of the king. So he has an important job. But look how she is described. Vehi Yoshevet B'Yerushalayim B'Mishneh V'Yidabru Eleha. So why is... that could be what we're going to try to find out, right? What was the topic that we said? Why do we care where she sits? What does that tell us? Exactly. So we're going to find out. That's why we're here today, right? So why does it tell us who her husband is? Why does it tell us his job? But more important, why does it say that she's sitting in Yerushalayim in the Mishneh V'Yidabru Eleha? Just say you went to Choldah, you asked her the question, and she's giving you the answer. What's so important about telling us where she sat? Which other woman, of course, does it tell us where she sat? Devorah, Tacharat Tomer, because it was important for us to understand she was in public. She had to be accessible. She had to act in a transparent way. And everybody went to ask her a question. So Huldah's not the first important Nevi'ah that we have. We had Devorah, who was the leader for all of Am Yisrael as well during that time. What? Okay, good. What about Devorah also? Well, how does it describe Devorah? How is she described? Eshet Lapidot. And one of the two ways to describe that? Either she makes wicks, it's about her, or she's married to a guy called Lapidot, maybe Barak, like a torch, right? Or maybe she is a woman who is on fire. Better, right? She is a woman on fire, Eshet Lapidot, and that's the view of the Abarbanel. Yeah?
But I'm always interested in names. Like, his name is Shalim, like complete, like Yerushalayim, but his mother's name is Tikva, which is hope, which is such a modern name. Like, it's so interesting, and like with that, like a name in
right, but Tikva is mentioned in Tanakh in a few places. Here it's actually a male name.
Shalim ben Tikva?
Yeah.
That's not his mother's name?
No.
Because he's Ben.
It just so happens that it, but, so we have a lot of questions, right? Why does it tell us all these things about her? What is it really describing about her? So before we even talk about her nevuah, so we have to ask, why are they going to Choldah? You want to tell me there are no men Nevi'im around during that time, right? So we have some of our biggest Nevi'im around during that time. Look at number three. Who's around during that time? Divrei Yirmiyahu ben Chilkiyahu mina kohanim asher ba'anatot b'Binyamin. Turn the page. Asher haya dvar Hashem elav b'mei Yoshiyahu ben Amon melech Yehuda. So we have Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu is around, right, during that time period. Who else is also around? Look at number four. Tzfanya also, right? Look at, he's in Treyasar, for those who don't know, right? Tzfanya is an Avi in Treyasar. And also look at his lineage, Divrei Hashem, right? Asher Ayal, Tzfanya, Ben Kushi, Ben Gedalia, Ben Amaria, Ben Chizkiah, Bimei, Yoshiyahu. So we have two other important Nevi'im during the time of Choldah. So why are they coming to Choldah? What's unique about her? And Radak says something very interesting. Look at number five in the Perek, right, that introduces Tzfanya, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Aleph, the Pasuk we just read. So, there were three Nevi'im during that time. So they say, what was the job of Yirmiyahu, right? They were all together. Yirmiyahu haya mitnabev bashvakim, in the marketplace. And that was Yirmiyahu. He was going out, screaming to the people. He was an individual who was giving tochacha, right where the people are, in their marketplace. Utsvanya bebatei knesiot. Tzvanya's main job was to be, right, a navi in the shuls, which is more of a focused group, right? V'chulda etzel hanashim, according to Radak. So we have these three nevi'im, who each one had a job, right, at the same time. And maybe, right, Tzvanya was a little earlier, and his main job was to get people to do tshuva. So he was in the time of Yoshiyahu, but before this whole refurbishing maybe took place, and he got people, you know, to be Balei Tshuva. So he had a hand in, let's say, making Yoshiyahu a Balei Tshuva, but then maybe only Yirmiyahu and Chulda were the main Nevi'im, but he puts Yirmiyahu in the marketplace, and he puts Chulda as being uniquely a Nevi'ah for the women. So our Pasuk has a question about that, because who's coming to ask her a question? The men and the leaders of that generation, the king, and all the leaders who were in the Beit Mikdash, right? The head sofer, the head scribe, the head kohen, everybody, they're coming to Chulda. And remember, what does Yoshiyahu say? Ask Hashem. He doesn't say go to Chulda and ask. They say ask Hashem, and their choice is to go to whom? To Chulda. So what's special about Chulda? What can we find, right, in where she's sitting, how she's sitting, that tells us something about her? And again, we have to understand very importantly when we are doing this, part of the goal of the classes that we're doing together is not just that we're reading the psukim in the pshat. We are seeing how the Medrash and how the Chachamim and how the Parshanim, right, the greats, right, Rashi also among, right, the Parshanim, how they are interpreting what messages we are getting, right, about these women. What messages should we understand? What are the important ideas that really resonate that they feel, oh, these are important messages that we're learning about these individuals. So what I want to do is first, I want to go to Targum Yonatan. Okay, number 8. We're going to get back to the Gemara. Do not worry. We're on page number 2 of the Chulda, right? And we're on 8. Targum Yonatan. Who is Targum Yonatan? For Chumash, what do we have? Targum Unkelus, right? For Nach, Nevi'im and Ketuvim, we have Targum Yonatan. He's a little later, right? But he is before all the great Rishonim, right, and Gaonim, and he translates Nach to Aramaic, and he's also very influenced by Medrash. So what does he say? Ah, who do they go to, right? And the Aramaic in the beginning is just like, right, what we understood in Hebrew. It tells that she's sitting in Yerushalayim. Look at the last few words. Yatva b'Yerushalayim, v'hi yatva b'Yerushalayim. She's sitting in Yerushalayim. Beveit ulpana, umilelu ima. So what is Beit Ulpana? We all know what an ulpan is. A place where you learn. Later it became where you learn Hebrew. But the first idea is where you learn Torah. So she's sitting in ulpan, because that means to teach. Right? So she's teaching. What does Mishnah mean? In ulpan, a place where you teach. What do we say about the Mishnah? Vishinantam levanecha. You learn it over and over and over again, right? We're learning something. We're remembering it. So she's sitting, the first, right, perush that we have, she's sitting beveit ulpana umileluima. So according to the Targum Yonatan, she's sitting in a beit midrash, right? She's sitting in a school. Look at Rashi. What does Rashi say? First of all, we're going to go back to the Gemara, right? But I want to do Bamishneh for now, what I highlighted and bolded. What does it mean that they went to her Bamishneh? He is quoting first, right, Targum Yonatan, Bebeit Ulpana, right, in the Beit Ulpana. And he also says, Shar yesh ba'azara shishmo shar chulda b'masechet midot. If you look at Masechet Midot, which talks all about the Beit HaMikdash, it tells us there's a shar chulda. If any of you have gone to the Ofel Gardens and you go into the back part and you see all the steps that go up, right now it's to the Mosque of Omar, right? You see that there is a sha'ar, there is a gate, and it has flowers on it. So the tradition is that that is shar chulda, which means that is the place. I mean, that's from the second Beit HaMikdash, but it was mentioned because that was close to the place where Chulda sat, that there was a gate. in the Beis HaMikdash that was called Shar Chulda. Why? Because her sitting in that spot was so important that for hundreds of years, remember, Masechet Midot is telling us about Beit Sheni, they had this place identified. So that's one idea. Another idea, says Rashi, you could do it pshat. There were double walls, and she is between those double walls, so you always knew where she was. But it's very interesting. We have, in many of the early manuscripts, and in all of the editions that you're going to see in print, we have this other idea. Bamishneh, what is that? Bamishneh. Not only is she sitting there, not only is she teaching there, but who is she teaching? The zkenim of that generation, which means she is teaching some of the earliest ideas, v'hi ha-mishnah, which means she is teaching some of the earliest ideas that eventually become Mishnah. And not only that, what's another interpretation, ba-mishneh? Me'ela hadvarim ad la'enei kol Yisrael. She's explaining what Sefer Dvarim is all about. Because what do we call Dvarim? Mishnah Torah. So we see Rashi saying, Chulda's on the highest level. She is that connection of making sure that the elders of the generation that are going to continue the Mesorah, she's making sure the Mesorah is not lost. And she's teaching it to the next generation. Also, what's another idea? The early pieces of what's going to be Torah Sheba'al Peh. Mishnah Torah. Another idea, right, that she is teaching what we understand, how we understand Sefer Dvarim, which is Mishnah Torah. Because what do we have in Sefer Dvarim? A lot of things that are doubled, right? Kol ha-dvarim ha-nichpalim ba-Torah, darsha barabim. She was speaking in public. Darsha barabim. She would explain, right, a lot of the doubling that we have in Mishnah Torah. And also what's going to happen, well, we see from the galuyot, galut. If you don't do Dvar Hashem, there is going to be a Chorban, there is going to be a galut. So we see that not only that, let's continue in the Rashi, right? Virimzei HaTorah Sod Meisharim. She also is teaching a lot of the hidden Torah, a lot of what eventually is going to be Kabbalah or the esoteric knowledge that we have. So Rashi really places Chulda in a very important place. Similar to what we saw, not together, but what we know about Dvorah. Dvorah was at a time where you have Sefer Shoftim, you don't have any great leaders. The time of Yehoshua to Shmuel is a dry spell. And it was Dvorah who helped keep the Mesorah, to keep the idea of Torah Sheba'al Peh, Torah Shebichtav, the idea of Mesorah to continue for the next generation until we have a Shmuel. What is Chulda doing? We have this whole time period. They don't even know where the Torah is, right? They're at a time where there is so much lost identity, so much lost Torah. And what is her job, right? She is that connector. She is connecting, according to Rashi, right, the earlier generations, the messages of the earlier generations, and she is making sure that this Kanim of the next generation are going to know, right, and be able to continue the learning of Torah. And we find this idea also, turn the page of the different things that she does. Turn to page 3. We also see something very interesting. We're going to see that the same story is mentioned also in Divrei Hayamim, which we have very often, that we have Divrei Hayamim telling us also the details of stories that we have in Melachim. Many times we have different details. Happens to be in Divrei Hayamim, it's almost identical. So what is Miuchas L'Rashi telling us here? Right? Miuchas L'Rashi is saying, look at the part, Yoshevet B'Yerushalayim B'Mishneh. What does it mean she's sitting in Yerushalayim B'Mishneh? And I have to make another comment. When you learn Divrei Hayamim and you're looking at Mikra Ogdalot and it says Rashi, it's really not Rashi. Rashi did not write a Perush on Divrei Hayamim. There is a manuscript that they found, right, very, very early on, right after Rashi's time. Chacham, we think it's Shlomo ben Kolonimus. They found an unsigned manuscript that was a Perush on Divrei Hayamim, similar to the style of Rashi. So really, we call it Miuchas L'Rashi. It's attributed to Rashi, but we all know, and anyone who studies it knows it's not Rashi, because all of this Parshans, quotes, and explanations and translations are into German. What did Rashi always translate into? French, and it's always called Balaz. He quotes Rashi as Rav Shlomo Yitzchaki Zal, so we know it's not Rashi. But when they wanted to put a Mikraot Gdolot together, they needed a Perush that they wanted that would correspond to Rashi. And just like when you open up Gemara and you learn Gemara, it doesn't say on the top Bali HaTosfos or Rashi, right? You just have to know this is Rashi and this is Bali HaTosfos. So when they put together, right, it wasn't to, you know, mix people up. It just was put in there as one of the earliest, you know, Pshat Parshanim that we have in a style similar to Rashi. So that's why it's quoted as Miuchas L'Rashi in our sheets, because it's attributed to Rashi. We think it's Shlomo ben Kolonimus from Spira, from Germany, one of the Rhine communities, and that he's father of Rabbi Yehuda Hasid, one of the most famous individuals during that time period. Okay, Yoshevet B'Yerushalayim B'Mishneh, what does he say? Shnei Chomot Hayu La'ir. There were two walls, and she's sitting between the two walls, right? We saw that Rashi also mentioned that. V'targumo Beit Ulpana, right? It's a learning house, a Beit Midrash. Perush Bimkom HaTorah, and this is also interesting. Kilishka Achat Haita La L'Cholda Smucha L'Lishkat HaGazit. What was in Lishkat HaGazit? The Sanhedrin, which means Cholda, when it says she's between the walls, she's between the walls, but she's next to, right, the Sanhedrin. She had her own room next to the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin sat in Lishkat HaGazit. Lishkat Cholda hiptucha lachutz ustuma klapei Sanhedrin. Out of Tznius, right? So Cholda had a room right next to the Sanhedrin. She's teaching. Her door is open to the other side because Tznius, it shouldn't be open to the Sanhedrin, right? But that is an unbelievable spot for Chulda to be sitting. Kach katuv b'masechet midot. This is from the Gemara, right? From the Mishnah. Mipnei tzniut, because of modesty. So it's very interesting, right? The high level, right, that we see the Gemara, the Mishnah, right, the Mefarshim, especially the early Mefarshim HaRishonim, have for Chulda. And we see some other interesting ideas. Look at Ralbag. Ralbag wants us to understand the Bamishneh b'Beit HaMidrash. That's number 12. Look at number 13, right? Where is she sitting? Oh, she's sitting b'Mishneh La'ir. So, number one, it's very interesting. So, Chulda is a Nevi'ah, but she's also someone who is seen as someone who knows Torah, is a big Talmud Chacham during that generation. And that's why it makes sense, one second, that the leaders went to ask her a question. I'm going to go on, and then I will take questions, because I want to get these main ideas down. So what was her interpretation of the opening of the Sefer Torah to this spot? So look at Pasuk Tetvav. So she says to them, okay, Ko amar Hashem Elokei Yisrael, Imru la'ish asher shalach etchem elai. Tell the man who sent you to me. Ko amar Hashem. We're back to source number one, and we're page one, and we are Pasuk Tetzayin. What is her message? She says, Hashem is going to bring a Chorban. And everything that's written in the Torah is going to happen. Why? Because they left me. They went after Elohim Achirim. And everything they do is making Hashem angry. My anger is going to burn, and it's not going to be able to be put out. Pasuk Yudchet. And tell Melech Yehuda, who sent you to me, Lidrosh et Hashem, tell him, Ko amar Hashem Elokei Yisrael, Hadvarim asher shamata. Everything you heard is going to take place. But, Pasuk Yutet, Yan rach levavcha, but because your heart is soft, and you are nichna mifnei Hashem, right? You did tshuva, and you're really following whatever Hashem says. So I heard your tefillah, and you cried, and you ripped your clothing. So I'm going to have you die before any of this happens. You're not going to see any of the evil that's going to take place. Now, this is a very important message. because Chizkiyahu gets a similar message. He's such a good king, and you know, he gets criticized by opening his whole, you know, palace and the Beit HaMikdash to visitors from Bavel who come. Now remember, during Chizkiyahu's time, Ashur was the big enemy. So he opens up his house, right, in the palace, and Yeshayahu tells him that was a big mistake. Churban is going to come. These people are going to come into the Beit HaMikdash, Bavel, and they're going to destroy everything. And what does Chizkiyahu say? Im shalom ve'emet yeh b'yamai. Oh, as long as there'll be peace in my day, I'm okay. What do you mean? You have to care about future generations. You have to care about what's going to happen later. What about your son? And it's shocking to us, but it is Chizkiyahu's son who is Menashe, right? One of the most evil kings who ever lived. Yoshiyahu, what is his response right afterwards? He gets Bnei Israel to do tshuva. He makes sure that all the Avodah Zarah all around is destroyed. He tries to convince people from up north, right, to come down and to do tshuva. So we see Yoshiyahu has a different approach, but alas, right, his children also, right, are not very successful. And the Churban happens during his children and grandchildren's time period. But what is really fascinating and is important for us here, she tells that there really is going to be a terrible Churban. And what's fascinating is some of the Mefarshim, and the Gemara explains, we still have to ask the question, why go to Huldah? So we see her amazing stature, right, in Am Yisrael, but Yirmiyahu is still around. So the Gemara says something very interesting. Go now to the Gemara, we're on page 2, number 6. The Gemara says, right, we have 7 Neviot. We have Sarah, Miriam, Dvorah, Chana, Avigail, Huldah, and Esther. And it says a few interesting things about Huldah. So the question is, how did they go to Huldah if Yirmiyahu is around? So one of the answers is, Amrei Bei Rav Mishmei Derav, Huldah Krovat Yirmiyahu Haita. She was a relative. Which means, of course, you would go to Yirmiyahu. He's the big guns during that time. So, of course, you would go to Yirmiyahu. But Yirmiyahu was okay because she was a relative. But Yoshiyahu himself, why would he send to Huldah and not to, right, the great, you know, Yirmiyahu of that generation? So here the answer is, Mipnei Shanashim Rachmaniyoten. Because women have more compassion. What were they thinking? Maybe if we send to Huldah, who's a woman, what do we know about Yirmiyahu? He's always giving tochacha, right? But maybe Huldah, she will have compassion, right? And that's why they sent to her. But in the end, right, what did they find? No, Dvar Hashem is Dvar Hashem. Whatever Hashem says goes, whether you're a compassionate woman or not. Really, you have to say what Dvar Hashem is. And another view is that he really was out trying to get Aseret HaShvatim, right, to come back from Galut, because the exile of the 10 tribes already happened from there. But we have another interesting point here. Amar Rav Nachman, I'm on line 1, 2, 3, 4 of source number 7. We're in the Gemara, Masechet Megillah, Daf Yadalad, Amud Bet, because in Masechet Megillah, we have the discussion of all the Nevi'ot, because we start the discussion, right, because of Esther. So what is the view of Rabbi Nachman? Lo ya'e yihiruta l'nishe. Tarte noshe yihirin havyan v'sanyan shmayu. Chadashma ziburta v'chadashma kirkushta. Rav Nachman says, it's not nice for women to be arrogant. Whoa, how did we get this discussion coming in here? Like, how is Huldah arrogant, right? And we have 2 women, right? The 2 most learned of our Neviot, right, who played this teaching role. So they say, if you look at their names, it's interesting. One's name is Devorah, a bee, and the other one is Huldah, a mole rat. So these are not beautiful names. So why do they have those kind of names, right? Because Devorah, right, she asks Barak to come to her. And here with Huldah, when she says, tell the king, she says, Imru la'ish, tell the man. You can't speak about the king and say, oh, tell the man who sent you. So what's fascinating here is that we have this interesting interface. On the one hand, we see the great position that Huldah had, and we see in the Mishnah, we see in the Gemara, right? We see the discussions in Masechet Midot. We see how the Mefarshim explain and say her unbelievable important role. But we also see, and just like we have about the great leaders, when Moshe says, bring everything to me, what does the Medrash say? Moshe, he's the most modest person. He shouldn't say, bring all the difficult cases to me. And Shmuel shouldn't have thought, oh, I know who's going to be the next king. Hashem makes him ask every single one of the brothers until Hashem tells him it's going to be David. Which means, this is not a criticism in the sense, oh, you see, when a woman reaches a high level, oh, you have to criticize her. This is showing that they're putting Huldah and Dvorah on the highest level, that almost equating them with Moshe and Shmuel. And we also have the same thing about Miriam. She's on such a high level, and we're going to do her next class, such a high level that we're very careful about everything that she does. She should be careful. What we find here very interestingly is that Huldah, because we're speaking about Huldah, really reached an unbelievable high level. And we see in the Gemara how she was so careful with her Beit Midrash, with where she would put the opening, right? The leaders of the generation sent to her because they know she is someone who, right, is going to give them a nivuah based on learning, but also maybe the idea that she was a woman, she would also be someone with a rachamim. But we see how she is really dealt with in such a respectful way and really is seen as one of the highest levels of individuals, right, in the continuing of the Masorah. So Huldah really is a very important individual, and we have to make sure that we always keep everything in perspective, because many times when people talk about Dvorah and Huldah, they only bring that phrase. Or only say, oh, Dvorah, she was a great leader, but it was in an informal way, because a woman can't be a shofetet, she can't be a bezdin. I say flip it the other way. What we see from all these treatments of Esther, of Benot Zlofchad, what we're going to see about Miriam, and there are many more, we're just doing a few, is that we see that the women who were learned, who played a spiritual role in Am Yisrael, were always respected on the highest level. And they too should behave in a certain way, because we're judging these individuals, right, with the most critical eye, because we respect them so much. They represent so much. And you have to walk this fine line, just like with Benot Zlofchad. They came to Moshe with respect and asked him, right, and went, right, to the highest echelons, but also did it in that kind of respectful way, because respect for the biggest ideas of the leaders, of the Masorah, of the Torah, and even of the king, is something that is very important. And what's fascinating, and we're going to end with this for today, is this interesting concept that we have in the end. We have something interesting, and I just want to bring this piece, number 14, Melachim Bet, Perek Yud Gimel. There is a situation where there's a battle in Melachim Bet, Perek Yud Gimel, and we find that someone's body touches the body of Elisha, and the minute they throw this person into the kever, because they used to bury in caves in Asuaris, right? When the person who was thrown in, boom, he touched Elisha's dead body, right? Elisha the great Navi, and he comes back to life. And who do they say is this person? And the progeny is the husband of Huldah. And what was his special quality? We're on number 14, last three lines. Hu migdolei hador haya ve'oset tzidkot b'chol yom. He was a good person, and he did, you know, tzidkot every day, and that was the schut why he was able to marry someone like Huldah. What would he do? He would fill water, and he would sit at the petach ha'ir, and everybody who would come, he would give them to drink, to make sure that they would have what to drink, and it would revive them. Ubizchut hatzdakot she'asa, sharta ruach hakodesh al ishto. Meaning usually we have it flipped. The women feed and clothe and take care. And in the schut that we enable our sons, our husbands, and the Jewish community, right, the husbands and the sons are the ones who are zoche to have Talmud Torah and to be great Talmidei Chachamim. But here it's interesting that once he was revived, right, the special role that he saw in his life was to help people and, in a sense, revive them. But it wasn't his schut that then Ruach HaKodesh would come on him. It was that Ruach HaKodesh would come on her. And that's why when once we mention Chulda, we also mention her husband, because in a sense also, right, it was part of his schut, right, that she became such a great individual. But we see from Chulda, right, the importance that not only the Tanakh, right, but we see the Gemara, we see the Rishonim, right, the Parshanim show, right, the role that Chulda played. And we saw in the Mishnah as well, right, Shar Chulda, and the way she really behaved in Masechet Midot and where she had her room, right, of teaching, we see that the tradition of learned women, the tradition of knowledgeable women, is not a modern phenomenon. We had this from the beginning of time. Sarah is converting the women right next to Avraham. From the beginning of what Bnei Yisrael are about, what Bnei Avraham are about, we women really always played an important role. Yes, also absolutely in the enabling role, but also in the spiritual role and also in the educational role, which is really seen as something to glorify and to really speak very positively about, right, throughout the different individuals that we see throughout Tanakh. So we should be, right, encouraged, right, to learn and to, you know, spread our Torah, right, which is the Torah of Hashem, right, and to continue this, but also to make sure we do it, and we always see this comment with tzniut, and to integrate those two things, it could really have a huge impact. And we see from the beginning of Torah, from the beginning of Avram and Sarah, until our very day. And I think it's really wonderful that we see today so much, you know, learning going around and really inculcated, not only, you know, in the general community, but also among all the women and you women who are sitting here today. So, Kol Tov.